Well, everybody, this is Wayne McIntosh, all the way from Vancouver. And Wayne manages the Wiki Educator project amongst, is it directing the e-learning initiatives from Commonwealth of Learning?
Yep, that's correct.
Directing the e-learning initiatives from Commonwealth of Learning. And Bronwyn introduced me to Wayne via email, and Wayne graciously took me over to Vancouver to talk about the Wiki Educator project. And almost everybody in this room has had some experience with the Wiki Educator platform, or wikis generally. And there'll be others coming when we're around 12, but it's more convenient time 12 for others to just come along. But Wayne, I might leave it to you to tell us more about yourself and what you've been doing in New Zealand so far.
Okay, I guess a good place to start would be to talk a little bit about the Commonwealth of Learning and who we are and what we do. It's an international agency that was set up by the Commonwealth Heads of Government in the late 80s. And our primary remit is to widen access to education and improve the quality of education throughout the Commonwealth, the 53 states of the Commonwealth, through the use of technology, largely focused on distance education. We have a strong history in distance education. We are funded by voluntary contributions of the member states of the Commonwealth. And we have a strong focus on the Millennium Development Goals, as well as increasing education for all. So that's a little bit about the Commonwealth of Learning. My specific portfolio, as Lee has indicated, is around e-learning and ICT policy. And I work essentially at two levels, one at the policy level with ministries of education in terms of distance education practice and enhancing the quality of learning, but then also at the implementation level with partner institutions from around the Commonwealth. This particular trip has been one of my longer trips. We do quite a bit of international travel. I've routed via Taipei, and for those of you that are well versed in the Commonwealth will know that Taipei is not part of the Commonwealth. But the reason I was in Taipei was to attend the board retreat as well as the Wikimania 2007 conference. I am a board member of the Wikimedia Foundation, and we have a strong association with the Wikimedia Foundation in the use of wiki technology. From an education perspective, the Commonwealth of Learning founded Wiki Educator, which, as you know, is a wiki technology, which we're using for a number of things. At one level, the development of content, of course. At another level, the development of tutorials and resources on how to develop open education resources. We also host networks or nodes, if you will, and of which the Otago Polytechnic is one of them, in terms of the things that you're doing on Wiki Educator. And the last one, which is a rather interesting one, but I'm rather proud of it, and that is the development of funding proposals that are developed as free content. And one of my colleagues reprimanded me when I started this initiative and basically said to me, well, what if somebody steals your ideas around, you know, grant proposals? And these are grant proposals around the use of free software and free content development. And my response to that is, I mean, that would just be wonderful, because if somebody else steals the idea and gets funding to make happen what we're trying to make happen, we're all the better for it. So that's a little bit about Wiki Educator. A bit of interesting or a bit of good news, we've just recently signed a memorandum of understanding with UNESCO. And one of the key projects that's been specified in the memorandum of understanding is the Wiki Educator project. Now, that's quite significant, because we now have two international agencies, the Commonwealth of Learning and UNESCO, that are supporting wiki technology for education, but not only that, free content. So that's a little bit of my background and what I do. I'd be keen to get a bit of a sense of the folk I'm meeting today.
Well, okay. We have lunch and the media, I think, is going to have two photos for the paper.
Yes, I noticed the press release. I hope we can live up to it.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll get this little projector going now.
Okay. Just to reflect on the question I started responding to, the work or our connections that we have with the Ministry of Education. New Zealand is in fact one of the largest contributors to the Commonwealth of Learning. Certainly by per capita, it is the largest funder of the Commonwealth of Learning.
Tell us how much Australia contributes.
Still zero?
Still zero.
Yeah. Amazing.
Astonishing.
That's why I'm
here. Yeah. That's why we don't visit Australia.
Yeah,
that's why, and recently with our Commonwealth Computer Navigator certificate, one of the provinces wanted to get on board, and we said, you're more than welcome to come on board, but you've got to pay.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also important to get a bit of a sense of where New Zealand's funding comes from. We are funded through NZA, which is the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, which is a little unusual in the sense, because most of our contributors are through the Ministry of Education. Our associations are with the Ministries of Education, so it's a very unique situation. And one of the things I've been doing since I've been at the Commonwealth of Learning, because I am a New Zealand citizen, so I'm pretty keen to actually move and promote stronger relationships between the Commonwealth of Learning and the work that has been done here in New Zealand. We held a regional workshop for the Pacific Islands as well as the New Zealand Protectorates in Wellington Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, which is really around building capacity in the use of the wiki. And we've launched what is now called Wiki Pacifica, which is an initiative which aims to work on the development of free content where the Pacific Islands are collaborating and working together. But the good news is that the Ministry of Education in fact hosted or provided the funding for the computer lab. So there's a good connection, and ministry officials were there. The Chief Executive Officer of the Ministry of Education came around to the workshop. Murray Brown, who many of you will know, who's the manager of e-learning for the Ministry of Education, was there. Peter Gurney, who those of you who are working in e-learning, he's part of the e-learning team at the Ministry of Education, attended the whole workshop. So it was very interesting to see the ministry sort of reflecting on wiki technologies and what they might mean for the sector. So I think we've got a good start there. Yes, they were certainly receptive to us and making a number of very encouraging statements. So I'm looking to see how we can build on, you know, on that foundation that has been established. There's also a question around the Wikimedia Foundation and who they are. The Wikimedia Foundation is a non-profit that actually runs the Wikipedia project, as well as all its sister projects. Because as you know, Wikipedia does have a number of sister projects. WikiQuotes, WikiBooks, Wikiversity, Wikisource, WikiSpecies. But of course the most well-known is the Wikipedia Initiative. It's a phenomenal organization. I mean, Wikipedia has got to be the most significant social revolution of our time, unquestionably. And part of what we are trying to do is to get a better sense of how these things work and what they might mean for education. A couple of interesting statistics around the Wikimedia Foundation. Their web servers are getting at the moment roughly about 30,000 hits a second. They are currently a number top 10 website. They shift anything between number 8 and number 10. Total staff of Wikipedia is 10 full-time staff members. So it's really a phenomenal project. It's very difficult to establish how many active editors there are in Wikipedia. But figures vary anything from between 50 to 70,000 full-time active editors on Wikipedia. But when you think of it, you know, number 10 webs, there's only 70,000 people that are doing this. And this is why we're pretty excited about the potential of these technologies for education. Because in fact, it has huge leverage potential. I'm sure when you speak to your colleagues around the use of wikis, you may not always be well received, and people, you know, may question and be rather skeptical around what it is we are trying to do. The big advantage, of course, is we actually don't need to convert every educator on the planet to buying into what we're trying to do. And my sense is that at this time, you know, I would guess, you know, 90% of all educators are going to be a little reluctant to be working in this area. But in terms of our strategic vision, we're hoping to build a free curriculum by 2015. And with 10% of the educators around the planet, I think we can get it right. So we've got the leverage potential. So and the other interesting connections, of course, between the Wikimedia Foundation and our work is that there's a lot of cross-fertilization and networking that goes on. So, for example, I serve on the advisory board of the Wikimedia Foundation. And similarly, we also have a community governance model where members of the community actually govern the project. So the Commonwealth of Learning doesn't actually own this project. It doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the community. And what we do is we provide the resources to host the server as well as building capacity around the project. But the governance of the project is governed by the community. And one of our members on the International Advisory Board is a chap by the name of Eric Muller, who some of you may or may not know. For those of you that are active in the Wikipedia project, you would know him as Eloquence. And Eloquence is a member of the board of the Wikimedia Foundation, but he's also our IT guru. And Eric is a pretty phenomenal guy. He's been around with the Wikipedia project right since its inception. But at the same time, he's also a senior lead developer of the MediaWiki software, which actually runs these projects. So we have a very, very strong relationship around strategic advice on the software. And this is the connection to the Tectonic Shift meeting, which we held earlier this year, which Lee attended, was really to get a bit of a conceptual roadmap on the table of the kinds of refinements we need for the technology to move it forward educationally. So those are the connections.
Wayne, what are your... I spent a lot of my time trying to orientate the objectives of the Otago Polytechnic or institutions like that, which, for better or for worse at the moment, have to pay their way through their services year by year. And then the objectives of the Commonwealth of Learning to reaching out to developing nations, getting them involved in participating in education and stuff like that. What are your ideas on how the objectives can be complementary? In your own minds. I mean, there are some things that, such as help put the press release together for here, are estimated that we've already saved about $10,000 in using the WikiEducator platform just from the technical assistance, the consultation expertise on copyrights, the people assisting the likes of Helen to get copyright clearance on some of the images we're using, hosting our content, and just general networking and things that are pretty immeasurable actually. That's the only thing I can think of as first, but have you got any other ideas on complementary relationships between Commonwealth Learning Initiatives and the institutes?
I think the most significant complementary relationship we can draw back to the very nature of what free content is and what it is about. The interesting thing around free content is you actually lose nothing as an institution by participating in free content initiatives. This sounds a little bit left brain, and I know that many folk would challenge these notions. But if we think around the fundamentals of teaching, the very act of teaching is about giving knowledge away. I mean, this is the prime purpose of education. We as educators are aiming to give knowledge away. And the point is, if you give me some of your knowledge, you still have it for yourself to use. And I think what is important around any institution contemplating a strategy around free content is that the institution, in fact, has nothing to lose, but it has everything to gain. And what I mean by that is, I mean, I've been in the academy a long time. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't know of any learner that has taken a decision to enroll at a particular institution based on the prescribed texts that the academics and the lecturers are prescribing for the students. And what I mean by it, I mean, it, in a competitive, a highly competitive environment, students are not taking the decisions on where to study based on the content that is taught by those institutions.
The program that's offered at one of the children's 29 situation, Doctorate in Education and Information Communication Technology, which is out in the house.
Yep.
But I would argue
again that the value proposition and the differentiation in the market are the scholars that are engaged in those programs. Certainly one can gain temporary differential advantage in a market by introducing a new program that nobody else has introduced. But that's a short-term gain, because it's pretty easy in today's world to actually replicate content. Increasingly, I think, if you look at global statistics, I might pull up one or two stats. Maybe that's what I should do. I should also concede, and I don't make apology for it. I do not use proprietary software at all. I have a very strong view on these issues. I, in fact, think it is unethical to use proprietary software. And my reasoning comes from I'm an educator. I do a lot of work in the developing world. And, you know, if you were to say to me, hey, Wang, you know, that's a cool piece of software, you know, you're using. Can I get a copy? I don't want to be placed have to deal with the ethical dilemma of do I help my friend? Or do I break copyright law? And, I migrated to free software quite a number of years ago, and I haven't looked back since. I feel I'm living an upright life now, I can help a bunch of folk out there, particularly in the developing world, and this is a huge issue. I mean, if you go and look at the global, and I'm going to use a bad word in the free software world, but taking audiences into account, if you look at the Global Piracy Software Study, which is an international study which is conducted every 2 or 3 years, the global piracy average on the planet is 32%, which effectively means that 32% of all software that is installed on desktops is unauthorized. Now, I won't ask you, to respond, but I very much doubt that anyone in this room has ever used pirate software, because of course that's illegal. You can't do things like this. But if you start breaking those figures down across the world, the piracy ratio for the US is 24%, and I find that quite surprising, because I mean the US isn't exactly struggling in terms of having the money to buy software. But when you start moving into the developing world, those rates are in excess of 80%. And that to me is very, very worrying. Taking into account the millions of people that are forced, in inverted commas, into piracy, if you will, through lack of funds. And the great tragedy, of course, is that there's no reason for it. There are free software equivalents available. And I do everything I need to be able to do without the use of any proprietary software.
Just to marry that up about a complementary thing here in New Zealand, my neighbours are a family of five on a maximum income of, not maximum, but their income is $30,000 a year. I don't know how they get by. And their rent is about $270 a week.
Yeah.
For kids going to school, etc., etc. Obviously, they're running pirate software just to keep up with the software that their school says they should be using, because that's what they think is industry standard. But it would be great if that school offered at least the support for people to learn the free software.
The free software, it's a huge issue. And I think herein lies the great parallel between the work that the Commonwealth of Learning is doing and what the education sector here in New Zealand. Unfortunately, I do have a bit of inside knowledge of the sector. And that is simply the fact that the digital divide is live and well in New Zealand. So, and there are huge disparities around issues of access and connectivity within New Zealand. And then therefore a lot of the work that we're doing, I do believe, is of huge benefit to the sector here in New Zealand. Speaking of kids, I mean, I had an interesting challenge recently. My son has just started high school, and they had, you know, sort of the opening where we could actually meet the teachers, and it was very well done. We actually met every teacher that Anthony would be having in his first year, and I got to the IT class, and we went through the curriculum, and it was a pretty impressive curriculum. But of course, everything is Microsoft. So, you know, I put up my hand and I said, well, you know, I didn't want to make a big scene of this, but I said, is it okay if Anthony submits his assignments in open document format? You see, because I don't have Microsoft at home. We don't have any Microsoft software at home. And the response of the teacher was, well, she immediately took me for a poverty case and said, don't worry, Anthony can come and sit during his lunch breaks and, you know, use... So now you must know I'm getting a little upset. I said, well, that's not my problem. You know, I have all the software I need. You know, I use, you know, free software. And the response of the teacher was, what's that? Mm-hmm. And someone who's teaching IT who doesn't know of the existence of free software, there's a huge problem. So then I said, well, clearly I saw that there's going to be an issue here. Don't worry. I'll come down tomorrow and I'll install a dual boot on one of the machines. She said, well, she wasn't sure whether this could be done. I had to get permission from the administrator. I said, well, that's fine, you know, get permission from the administrator. But as I'm walking out, I bump into the headmaster and we have a little chat. And as things worked out, there's a happy ending to the story. The headmaster told me that, you know, the systems admin guy's been trying to get Linux into this place for the last 10 years. Just going to have a chat with him. And the problem was sorted within a day. But I mean, the real issue here is, at which point does an education institution have the right to decide which software? I mean, if you at the Otago Politic were to shut down your parking lots to folk who don't drive Mercedes Benzes, there would be an issue.
Solve the parking problem.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
We had an issue a couple of years ago where an issue actually was a very good solution. The open access suite here, yeah, where students go, yeah, to do their computing. When we tutored them there, was giving out open office on CDs to, yep, students to take away because
Okay, so what I'll do is I'll just run through a couple of slides very briefly. I mean, I don't want to. I'll talk about Cole. So John brings, sends his greetings, of course. I think it's worthwhile reflecting a little around technology and technology innovation from a historical perspective in terms of its impact on education. Josiah Bumstead, 1841. The inventor or introducer of the blackboard deserves to be ranked among the best contributors to learning and science, if not among the greatest benefactors of humankind. We move on to the motion picture, the most revolutionary instrument introduced into education since the printing press. Then television came along. It now seems clear, however, that the television offers the greatest opportunity for the advancement of education since the introduction of movable type. The connection here to the printing press, I think, is quite significant. Computers. So we go on. Given all this technological innovation, I think it's worthwhile to have a look at what impact have we had on education. I just want to look at two statistics. And this obviously is, from our perspective within the Commonwealth of Learning, working across the planet. But this is a very interesting statistic. Many of you will be familiar with the gross enrollment ratios which UNESCO collect. And what the gross enrollment ratio does is it effectively measures the participation rates for the age cohort expected to be at a particular level against the population in the country at that, you know, for that age cohort. But these statistics are not that meaningful. It becomes meaningful when you turn them upside down. In other words, instead of looking at participation rates, look at it at a personal level from the folk that aren't going to be going to school. And what is worrying there, I mean, are 4 out of the 7 regions of the planet, and this is just the gross enrollment ratio for senior secondary education, senior secondary, right, which is the last 3 years of the secondary school system. In most parts of the world, almost half of the kids of that age group will not have the privilege of going to school. So in spite of all this technology, we're not really making a difference. I mean, take a look at sub-Saharan Africa. 76% of the kids of school-going age, senior secondary primary, will not have the privilege of walking into a classroom or seeing, you know, having the privilege of interacting with the teacher. We don't have enough money to build enough classrooms. We don't have enough money to build to train teachers. It's a very serious problem. Universal secondary education by 2015 ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen. When you start looking at tertiary education figures, the problem is far worse. The average for sub-Saharan Africa, the participation rate is
3%. I've seen your course similar statistics in New Zealand, isn't it? And so senior high school, 50% dropouts, that would be, before the compulsory
Okay, so I guess we turn this around. So what do we need to do? I mean, one potential solution is, well, let's go to the industrialized world, the developed world, and maybe they've got the solutions for this challenge. Now, I just want to show one statistic. What this graph does is it plots the increase in tuition fees at public education, or at universities or tertiary education, in publicly funded tertiary education institutions in the US against the inflation rate over the last decade. Anybody that knows anything a little bit about economics will know that that's not a sustainable system. One cannot sustain it. And it's kind of a sort of a double-edged sword problem, because in these countries that are struggling with participation rates, the more successful you are in terms of widening access, the greater the demands on your state coffers. So it's a very challenging problem.
What's the breakdown? What's the major factors for that increase?
I think it's a multitude of factors. Increasing cost of research, productivity of the system. Yeah.
Drop in productivity.
Nothing
to
do with
teaching.
Okay. Can technology make a difference? We think potentially. Free content must have a role to play in this, because it is a mechanism for radically reducing the cost of provision. Now, obviously, our interest is in distance learning. We have a strong focus in distance learning. And if you go into the economics of distance learning, you will see that the 80% of your costs of the production of distance learning resources, well-designed distance learning resources, is effectively the academic and lecturer's time in developing those resources. And if we can share that development cost, it is a way of bringing down the cost of provision.
I actually had a comment from an associate dean at the university the other night, I was sharing a cup of coffee there. She said, I don't know why distance courses get as much funding face to face. They don't have to have a classroom. I mean, it used to be you didn't get the same funding, but when you put and take into account the development costs sometimes, you might have a point of communism.
You know, the thing is, New Zealand is very privileged internationally. It is one of very few countries where distance education is funded at the same levels as face-to-face tuition. And I've spent my life in distance education. I was with the University of South Africa, which was in fact the very first single-mode distance teaching university of the world. We were funded at 30% of FTEs. Because distance learning, if it's done properly, on scale, is far more cost-effective than face-to-face teaching. And I won't say this too loudly, but in fact, its quality tends to be better for a number of reasons.
As long as you provide the support.
As long as you're providing... Exactly. As long as you're providing the support and you're designing the resources appropriately.
And you're preparing the students to learn in that way.
Exactly.
I don't think it's any cheaper.
It is cheaper. It is cheaper if it's designed properly. And we have ample research evidence to support this. But you're right, it needs to operate at scale.
It'd be variable subject to subject.
Yeah.
There's a very large cost analysis on the EU about three years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't stack up to the European. But then again, it depends what is in the cost of what beans are being counted.
The costs go up and more struggling in our little areas to
do distance learning
and not to
the central office. But if you've got
whole institutions
behind it with
a centre that's designed,
exactly,
then you're not going to get a counter. Several institutions. In New Zealand, we have the Tertiary Court of New Zealand, it's meant to be an alliance. We call it an alliance or a collaborative effort between the institutions party to that. To share the load, but there are a few obstructions to that, such as copyright.
So very briefly, what we're doing with Wiki Educator, we're working together with the Freedom Culture to build a free curriculum by 2015, all levels and all sectors. This is our aim. And hey, if we don't get it right by 2015, 2017 will be just fine.
Well, how do you answer the critics? Because I would have the critics in my school, so I work in occupational therapy, one of the two programs in New Zealand. And in some of the countries you're saying occupational therapy doesn't even exist as a profession. Where if we create the new resources for our students that are relevant for others to use, in this day and age, when we're not getting as much funding for our students, a head of school legitimately might say, actually, we could package these and sell these, and it would generate income for school. So we get to the point that people start cooking and guess. But how do you answer that with the initial...
At two levels, I don't think this the sale of courseware is a cash cow.
Just based
on experience, and that is fine. If a school wants to tackle a commercial initiative through the sale of content, that's fine. And what we are doing here in the free curriculum movement is not in opposition to commercial produced content. That's fine. In fact, we encourage folks to do that. What we are doing is we're doing this as an alternative.
But it's funny to answer, because if I go to my head of school and say, we could do this, we could provide it free, it fits with the philosophy of our profession, it's about occupational justice, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You say, yes, well, that's all well and good, but we need to generate some income.
But it's the whole alternative. It's not just the content that's coming up here. Mm-hmm. It's the skills from the teachers that are here.
The other,
it was such a national ball that everybody would be doing it. So there's obviously things that haven't been done.
The other side of the coin, of course, is by having five institutions work together on developing the content, you reduce your costs to develop those materials. So it's, in a sense, two different models. One model is managing risk through shutting down or through closing. Yeah. So that's what you do. You close down access and strap everything down by copyright in the hope that you'll make some profit in the future. And that's fine. I mean, that's a perfectly legitimate business model. The other model, of course, is an aggregation of will. So we manage risk by sharing. In high-risk areas like pre-content development, which is a risk area. I mean, we must be candid with each other. But we manage that risk by spreading it.
And what about referring to the open source software development economic models. They obviously don't make money directly from the software, but they make money from the services that support the use of that software. So obviously I think that aligns more to our core purpose in education, where we have content, but our core business is the service around that content, helping people to communicate, access the content, interpret it, and all that sort of stuff. So if we ramp up our emphasis on our service side of things to make money from, rather than amping up our profit thinking on content, which I think is pretty short sighted.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help your situation.
There's also the marketing issue. If we produce material that is useful worldwide, that's got a Otago Polytechnic on the cover, please feel free to use the copy. We're not going to lose students, we're going to gain students, because people say, that's good stuff. Yeah.
And that's...
It's
you can get it there,
they're going to
come here.
No, that's totally wrong. That is absolutely wrong, because it's not the material they need, it's the support, and that's what Roman was saying. Mm.
What's the difference between your argument, which is a branding argument, and the argument you brought before with the software?
With Microsoft.
No,
it's not, I'm saying that.
No, I'm actually agreeing with you. What you're talking about is the same Microsoft angle.
Marketing is a reality, we have to do it, and making money, we have to do that to pay our salaries. But I'm saying this will actually help that.
And free software brands. I mean, there are any number of Linux distros. And you go and take a look at Canonical Limited, who have really got a very strong focus with the Ubuntu distribution. I mean, there's a lot of brand with that. And it's one of the, I would encourage the Polytechnic to actually brand your free content that you're developing on Wiki Educator as a node, to put up there. This is a Otago Polys initiative. That's one of the things we permit, which you would... It would be hard to do that in Wikipedia. But we've got no issue around branding, and I do think it's important.
We did have issue with that with the Wikimedia Foundation's Wiki University project. We started branding subtly, but they took issue with that straight away.
You can brand as much as you want. We've got no issue with that. Yeah, with balance. I mean, it is a wiki. Some folks might edit it, and improve.
Do you think that might have an impact on inter-provider collaboration?
I think it will have an impact on increasing collaboration. Otago Poly, by far, is New Zealand's leader in this area. By far.
But the situation we have at the moment, Wayne, is that through that tertiary core in New Zealand, World Alliance, is that we might start using content produced in that alliance, which we're not sure about. We might start lifting some of that and putting it onto the educator. And we don't get very far before something in that fence.
Screens copyright.
We don't do this. Mm. And so it's short-sightedness again, because obviously we're putting it on a platform which we can all then keep up to date and all that sort of stuff. But so that's the situation we have. And then we have a situation where the content predominantly used in our courses has been provided by a publisher, and obviously it's copyrighted. So we don't actually have in some courses the tradition of producing our own content.
Yep.
We're relying on external content.
Third-party resources.
I understand.
But we're doing that as well, because if you spend the effort to create that content, it can actually be taken away from you under the current situation. It's an environmental problem that we have here rather than...
But yes, and something interesting happened with the media release of me coming here. I got an email from the Open Poly. Why aren't you coming to meet with our executive? Why aren't you coming to talk with us about Creative Commons? So it's very, very interesting. And my response, of course, is, well, you don't have an IP policy that promotes it. I'll come speak to you next time.
Somebody might remind me updates on the IP policy.
Yes.
I do believe that there are opportunities for collaboration in selected areas. It might not be appropriate in all areas. but I do think it's going to happen. And, it just makes such good sense.
It'll be something that can help the leadership to show up.
Yeah.
It's about sharing the team's content.
Mm.
Me and I got
slipped around
the universe.
Oh, anyway.
We've been apart for about 3 years, but is it really sharing?
No,
it's not collaborating, is it? It's not collaboration.
We may see a potential to sell something on out of the team's initiative. They may worry about doing content that's pretty
The benefit of using the wiki platform being open and fully documented every entry. So we have the wiki records every edit that's ever made, all discussion around pages and stuff like that. So when we add, in my instance, with the TAS partner, picking up a little bit of a scheme, and they're listing off all of the breaches of copyright, and then I looked at them, and actually there was no content in there, there were just titles. Mm. And it was quite nice to be able to point them to it and say, do you do your homework before you do this? Because there is no content in there. And obviously it doesn't help politically, technology useful in that instance.
But it's very, very useful, and also, I mean, copyright contraventions can arise. I mean, folk may not be as well versed in copyright issues. I mean, one of the challenges around distance education is there are things that are acceptable in a face-to-face situation under fair usage, whereas in distance education would be a contravention of copyright. So it's an interesting problem. It's an interesting problem.
It's about distance without open access, though. It's distance that closed, yes. That's equivalent to a face-to-face situation in copyright, is it not?
No, not necessarily.
The agency that we pay for copyright, they are developing a new, I don't think they call it a policy guideline, and it will include digital artifacts. New Zealand is quite behind them. Policy or legislation in respects that, but I think it would be fair to assume that if you have using one management system and closing the access to resources, nobody can see it except you and the students.
In that situation, it would be fine. Mm-hmm. However, many distance education initiatives print study guides in support of the resources, and in that situation, it wouldn't be.
So that would be DVDs and printouts and things like that.
So where there's not access control. So it is, and it's one of the issues we at the Commonwealth of Learning worry about very, you know, considerably in terms of managing these things, because a big focus of what we do is distance learning.
I don't want to sort of hijack it off onto it, but what's the difference between a face-to-face situation where you might be giving a copy of a paper, like it's a paper thing, and printing it off? In a distance situation, if it is a clock, like within a management system, it's password protected and it's only paying students a task.
Interesting challenge. You can, under fair usage, make copies of an article, for a journal article, and dish it out to the class. However, you aren't allowed to keep stock of it.
No.
Now, in the distance education scenario, you need to have stock in order to, when you're registering students, you've got a stockpile in order to distribute. So typically what happens is these articles are put into a reader. They have to be cleared for copyright before they can be distributed. In most jurisdictions of the world, I mean, there are subtle differences between different jurisdictions. But, you know, that's an example.
But again, we pay an agency for, they're auditing this year, I think, and what they do is they literally have somebody with lab coats on sitting there, photocopiers and ticking on how many photocopies you make, make statistical analysis, and then we pay a couple of tens of thousands of dollars per year on something on the thing. But again, if we were to get sophistication to each of us understand pre-content, pre-licensing and stuff, and try and use a lot more pre-licensing, when that audit comes around again, we might actually dramatically reduce
the amount we pay annually to the copyright agency. But if we don't keep stock, if we simply have a PDF on a closed learning management system, that's surely exactly the same as the face-to-face situation, isn't it?
New Zealand's situation is interesting in terms of the negotiated, you know, the tertiary sector negotiates rights for usage of copyrighted materials within the country.
Yeah.
So it's a little different. So there are those issues. I know that, I mean, the new Digital Act, or whatever they're calling it, is going to be tabled at Parliament in the next sitting.
It's only changing music, I think. I don't think they're approaching anything else at all.
The Digital Commons Strategy by National Library, they are taking up Creative Commons, whether or not they get it through, I don't know, their consultation process.
And what they're also doing is they're porting the Creative Commons license for New Zealand, which is a big when I get back now, as I'm going to be trying to promote a bit of collaboration around that, because it's focused on the digital strategy as opposed to widening it also to education as well, sort of, because I mean I think it needs to have an education focus too.
Wayne, just while we're on that topic though, because we do have a new intellectual property policy that's been tabled and passed by leadership and consultation process just yesterday, and the key points are that individual creators of content, students and teachers, own their content unless they've been specifically contracted through a work agreement or any other sort of contract to say that they've been commissioned to create content for the Polytech, okay? And then the default copyright statement for Otago Polytechnic content, including staff who are using Otago Polytechnic as a platform to promote that content, our websites, our classrooms, our computers and things like that, is the default for that. It's a Creative Commons Attribution license, which is a very liberal free license, not the most, but it's quite a... And then, the individual, because we need to maintain the rights of individual creators, individual creator has the right to restrict that. It's just that the default is open shared. But you have the ability to restrict that if you're in some culturally sensitive situation, commercially sensitive situation, etc. So that's on the tables now, and that puts us at Tiger Polytech, which is probably one of the most progressive institutions next to Connections, I think, that you need to use that either. Probably copyright wise, one of the most
impressive. Yep, it's taking the time to come down here.
The EC is very interesting.
Yes. Certainly, the last round of ECDF, if I recall, that they have been encouraging Creative Commons licensing. It wasn't always the case. That's great progress. The other point I should also just make out, anything that you add to WikiEducator, you actually own the copyright, okay? WikiEducator doesn't own their copyright. So you still retain copyright and your intellectual property rights. You're just effectively licensing the usage under certain conditions. I won't spend too much time on this, around the core freedoms. But I do think it is important to spend a little bit of time actually going into what these communities mean about freedom. And the reason why it's important to do this, and we as part of the Commonwealth have good experience of this in terms of the abuse associated with colonization, is that freedom is easily lost. And if we don't know what the freedoms are we're talking about, it's very difficult to defend them. So from that perspective, and a lot of what we do is drawn by the work of Richard Stallman, the great philosopher around the free software, the free software movement. Interestingly, it only took them 22 years to get to the point that we had a full reasonable suite of free software to use. It wasn't too long. And when you think about it, it's a lot harder to develop free software in terms of access and ability to participate, because you need to be a computer programmer in order to do that. Free content is going to be a lot easier, I think. Okay, what are we doing? This is our strategic plan. You'll see very strong similarities between what we're doing and New Zealand's digital strategy in terms of the cornerstones of what we're focusing on. But the main focus, of course, is to build a thriving community of free content developers across the world. By building capacity to do this, by building content resources on how to do this, this is from Cole's perspective, but also establishing the connections, the networks that support this, and also the technology tools that connect people and make it easier to do. It's a phased strategic plan. Our first phase was to establish the foundations, get the server up and running, get a community governance structure in place, all these sorts of things, develop some basic tutorials, that sort of thing. We're going to be moving into our next phase, which is to radically scale up the rate of content development across the planet. And then moving into sustainable implementation, because at the end of the day we need real warm-blooded learners that are taking real courses using free content, and if we don't achieve that we fail. So that's the focus. I've talked about that a little bit of how we're doing. The wiki is a little over than a year old. This is our growth, and these are unique visits, okay, to the site. And we're pushing just below 4,000 unique visitors from Wiki Educator every day.
What do you mean by that? First time that they're
coming
to the site?
No, wouldn't necessarily be first time that they're coming to the site. In terms of unique logins per day. Okay, so it could be repeat visitors. These aren't hits. Right.
So just comparing that to the Polytech website, which is apparently doing quite well on our stats. We have 14,000 users per month. So
we're doing about
4,300
by 30
days,
I guess. Which is 120,000.
Yeah. So just again, picking Terry's point of the marketing angle.
If you can have 4,327 people per day seeing the words of Otago Polytechnic on some really good content.
Yep.
Yeah, not to say that it's not using our website, it's just that we have our content out there on the platform as well as our own website.
This is an interesting stat. These are just our growth in terms of hits on the site. And these are just web hits. And what I've plotted here is the number of days it took us to reach each consecutive 500,000 hits on the site. Our first 500,000 took 157 days. Our next 500,000 up to 1,000,000 hits took us 102 days. The next 500,000 took us 41 days. The next 500,000 took us 21 days. But that's a good sign if you're building a wiki. I mean, you've got to be crazy if you want to start a wiki operation from scratch, because you've got to have a sustainable community. And there were a number of reasons why we decided to set up Wiki Educator as opposed to going with Wikiversity. Because that was on the cards very early in the project plan. So we're comfortable with the growth thus far. A couple of examples. Some of you may be familiar with the Virtual University for Small States of the Commonwealth. This is an initiative that was set up by the Ministers of Education of the Small States in the Commonwealth, largely Pacific Islands, Caribbean Islands, some countries in Africa, in Europe, Malta and Southeast Asia, the Maldives, small states, huge challenges around and having robust and sustainable education systems. So these small states are collaborating with each other in building curricula, and we are doing it through the use of free content, and the development is taking place on Wiki Educator.
One of the potentials we've seen already is with the tourism developments. You have development to tourism generally, and we also have a development of tourism. Probably need to coordinate that collaboration a bit more.
This is a project I'm particularly proud of. The Commonwealth Computer Navigator Certificate. And this is because of my biases, and I've already apologized for them early on. This is a project focused on building basic ICT skills. Things in word processing, the use of spreadsheets, communicating on the internet. And a couple of years ago, the Shuttleworth Foundation in South Africa funded an initiative called the Open ICDL, which is an open version of the International Computer Driver's License, which is part of the NZQA here. I mean, ICDL is certified at school level. The problem with that development was the learning design of that project was atrocious. So what we are now doing is trying to add value to those open content, or that open content, because we can, it's a CC BY-SA license, so we are redesigning those materials. And this is available as free content for any institution to teach, including yours. That's right. The cool thing about this, it teaches these skills using free software. So it will be possible for institutions to provide student support around basic ICT skills in the use of free software very soon. And this is an international collaboration. The University of the Western Cape in South Africa is a core module collaborator. Indira Gandhi National Open University in India, an institution with only 1.4 million learners, is working with us there. In the Caribbean, we're working with the University of the West Indies, the Jamaica campus. In the Pacific, the Open Poly is helping us out. And North America, Penn State University, you may know the World Campus. They, in fact, are developing their time to this project free of charge as a contribution in kind. What I would encourage you to have a look at, and I forget now the name of the qualification, but there are a couple of bits that when added to the basic ICDL, there is a tertiary qualification in the use of use of computers, which is approved by the NZQA. It would be a pretty neat thing for New Zealand to actually collaborate on holding those missing bits, because then you've got a qualification you can teach. And what is nice about this is not competing with anybody, because nobody actually teaches this right now in this as free software, so it's a nice pilot.
So can I just hang on the computer navigators a bit? Is that being designed for children at this stage? Is that just going by the feature?
Secondary.
Because a lot of the needs we have here are primary level computer literacy skills still, so not saying.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's
a good point.
And I'm wondering, we're also heavily developing digital information literacy resources. I'm not too sure, should we coordinate ourselves into these initiatives? Should we keep doing what we're doing and then wait for a coordination to happen? What should we do, you think, knowing that these are going on and that we're developing a lot of resources under our own kind of ideas of structure? Also, we're not restricting ourselves to only the teaching of free software.
Yeah, certainly.
Yep. So I'm not sure what we should do, just lay it in that one, because everybody in the room...
Be bold.
Yeah, okay.
That's my recommendation, be bold.
We're trying to design it so that every other department, at least in an organisation, can pick these numbers up and plug them to the programs in case they do have a body of students who don't have basic computer skill, and I'm not even basic, specialised right into energetic, into video and stuff.
I think
contextualise that to our students. Yeah. The interesting thing is with our Memorandum of Understanding with UNESCO, one of the items specified in that agreement is now, and I was pretty intrigued with what they're calling it now, it's now called the UNESCO Commonwealth Computer Navigator Certificate. So John came to me and said, well, why don't you have a problem with this? Because, Collis, sort of conceived a bunch of this stuff. I said, absolutely not. We permit derivative works, and that's a derivative work, so, we encourage it.
So we can pull content from this and put it into our own content.
You can call it the Otago Computer Navigator Certificate. Fine, it's a derivative work, go for it. The Floss for Edu project is a neat project. It's been a grassroots project which was originally conceived in East Africa. And what this is really about is the development of free content and the use of free software tools in education. And there are regional chapters that have now been established for East Africa and West Africa. There's one for India. In fact, this week, a Francophone chapter will be launched. There is already a French Wiki Educator which has started. And what I'm particularly proud of is that the regional translation work was started by the Cameroon from Africa. So I should have changed the slide, but the Pacific chapter was launched yesterday. So, this is a little out of date, and, it's not on the wiki, so it's a bit difficult to, update. And that is the Wiki Pacifica. The group have called it now Wiki Pacifica. So, and their main content development initiative is going to be called OERs for Oceania. So they into the assonance and.
It's open educational research.
Yeah.
What language are they primarily?
English, but there is. That's one of the advantages we have in the Commonwealth, because we do have a common language. But there is a keen interest for local languages. Samoa is pretty upset around some of the curriculum work that is happening in New Zealand around Pacific languages, because they are of the opinion that Samoan should be taught by Samoa. So we said, well, go for it, you know.
Feedback working in Japan promotes that and prevents us swooping in and calling it out.
There's always that issue. I mean, we have a number of projects from Europe that are running on Wiki Educator, and that's fine. We haven't got an issue with that. I mean, but what we unashamedly do is do. We do promote developing countries in terms of having a voice in this particular project, and we do spend a lot of money on building capacity in the developing world, which you wouldn't find at Wikiversity. I mean, Wikiversity had a bit of an issue around paying people for developing content. And what we would do is we have no problem around actually paying people to develop content that will build capacity. We want to speed up the process.
That sort of colonization thing, I mean, that's certainly something I thought about. You know, what have I got to offer in terms of content? Okay, I know my content. But, you know, I don't know anything about the application of that content here or here or here.
Which comes back to that discussion I had before about people give content out freely, it's the services of assisting people to use that content or drawing you in to deliver the learning that goes with that content. But that's my issue, that occupational therapy is very contextualised.
Yeah.
And I am at risk of colonising another country by going in and saying, this is the way to think about it.
I don't think you're at risk of colonising another country. I mean, at two levels. One, I don't think content developers should necessarily be developing for other countries. I think you need to be developing for your own target audience.
So
but by the same token,
it's contextualised to your country and your culture.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And
the technology enables recontextualization very quickly and easily.
Yeah. And that is the value addition.
That's right. And I agree with that, but then it's like, so I have created this, I guess we can package it up and start along with two if we wanted to. I'm not saying that this is what our school is discussing, but I can hear the discussion come up. But what you said before, Bronwyn, was that, you know, we've become branded as Otago Polytech now because of that. So that's great content, so we're going to change it for our context, but neither will they want to bring us in to. You're talking about that's where the payment comes in, that's where the money is.
That's they, if they want, go and enroll in your courses because they like the look of what they see. They know that you offer a certain package and therefore that attracts them.
And then that is the colonisation of the knowledge of our profession in other countries.
They choose to come to
they group. Come because
we're
that's
not open them to be.
That's the difference. Yeah.
It's not an
active
choice, it's a passive choice.
I guess what this does, I reckon, is just by putting the issue on the radar, you'll be thinking like that every time you press save as you go to the wiki. I think that's quite useful, and I think it's also quite useful that we think, we're kind of forced to think more globally when the author to this, and that helps make it more human readable. We realise that we're being perhaps overly contextualised here, we can decontextualise a little bit. It's all a bit detailed and stuff, but I think having an awareness of that presence actually helps you in the better improvement of your own resources.
Is the experience that the person who wants to contextualise in Kenya actually just takes it and does it, or is there... Is there
at the moment, just taking it, I was going to suggest to Wiki to come on for learning that at some stage that they ramp up that facilitation role.
Right.
Is that when a duplication page has been created, not to say that, this is a duplication you might want to stop, it's to say, great, creating another page. There's also these people over here that have been creating and make an introduction and kind of facilitate a community practice or whatever, professional network. That's something I think Commonwealth Learning in the future could play more of a role in.
Do you mean so that you have tools having generic resources with
it could be. I mean, I would, if Wayne or somebody facilitated, introduced the Kenyan to me and say they're working on the same project, say, great, this is the angle, this is the situation, the context that we're developing for. What in your situation is common? Maybe we can work on something, but I wouldn't say let's merge and create one resource. Certainly, the context is completely different. And so it's just all the common learning does is make the introduction and leave it up to the individuals to see where they can take it.
but it would just help, I think, because somebody needs to have that global view of what's going on.
The HIV AIDS course is a good example of that, because colleagues developing it for nurses here in people with HIV. Now, what we're hoping is to make contact with somebody that could give us some information about what's happening.
Which we can certainly facilitate.
Two years from now, we might be sending nurses who have experience in Africa. What could come out of that connection we have with teachers in Africa?
So basically, this will be my last slide. Another neat project we're working on is the Learning for Content initiative. This is really about getting folk involved in the whole process, you know, based on the notion that if folk are involved, they will begin to understand what this is all about. And we're hoping to train 4,000 teachers across the Commonwealth over the next year. And how this is going to work is we will provide a set of an open education resource toolkit available as free content, and actually make use of the Wikipedia community or alternatively folk who have basic wiki skills, and we will pay a small an honorarium to folk to facilitate workshops at local institutions. But the deal is going to be that, hey, you're going to get free training here. In order to pay for your training, you've got to donate one lesson of free content back. So I don't know how successful this is going to be across the panel, but we're certainly going to give it a bash.
We're in pretty good credit now.
I would say most people would say one, about 100.
Fair enough.
So we've got it clear where you're going to be paying agents in locations to run face-to-face workshops.
And part of that is about it's to have local intelligence in helping select participants that are likely to, you know, we're not interested in the skeptics that don't buy into this idea. I mean, that's pointless. So it's about, and you know, because local institutions have the networks, know the people. And you know, we'll be able to do some work in this.
Right.
I mean, this is an example.
Yeah, 400 inches in our
objective. The big strategic developments in terms of getting big donor funding over the next 2 years is going to be free textbooks.
Yeah.
But if you go to the average teacher and say, "Well, join us in developing a free textbook," they'll hang on, we come back next year. So, you know, we're starting this. I mean, this is an idea or a concept we're working on, the notion of handouts for teachers, the kinds of things that teachers would typically use in the classroom, in a face-to-face, you know, scenario. Maybe it's a project or you know, a worksheet or whatever that, you know, help with their work. So this is a project to get folk collaborating on these handouts and worksheets. And I've actually identified, and given my New Zealand biases, there are two teachers from Christ's College. So I need to point that out because it is from the South Island, that are developing a couple of examples to move us forward in this area.
Okay, but just thinking there, we've got a couple of teachers in the room who are producing quite excellent handouts, like a better word, on their blogs. Mm-hmm. And there's an excellent little tool called HTML to Wiki, or another
one. Yep.
Yeah, you just click a button and it turns your blog.
That's in fact the tool that is used to do this. HTML, it is in fact HTML to Wiki. It's HTML to PDF.
Yeah.
Good news here. This is somewhat confidential information, so we should maybe switch the recorder off.
All right.
Thanks for coming.